Okay, hello, welcome to my talk. I want to give an update about what my team and I were working on the last year and which impact it has for OpenSUSE, so for you as users, and where you can help or feedback ideas. So my name is Thorsten Kuckuck. I'm distinguished engineer at SUSE, and I'm leading the future technology team, which means, as somebody said some days ago, we are doing that stuff which will be current in 2 or 3 years, so far forward looking. And in my team are Alberto, Danilo, Fabian, Ignaz, and Stefan as full-time, and Mark Elias currently as trainee. Except Danilo and Alberto, and Fabian, Ignaz, and Mark are here. If you have questions to their talk, ask them directly. That's much easier. So, I'm since over 25 years with SUSE and started my career about 30 years ago with glibc and Linux NIST as open source developer. So, at first, what did we regarding utilities and servers? I don't know how many people know it, but I'm responsible for mentpages.opensuse.org. I created the initial setup and I reworked it beginning of this year so that we can now also have the Leap 15.6 and 16.0 manual pages included without killing the Pontifex server who is building all the data. We have currently 350,000 manual pages and the Google search statistic is 150,000 pages indexed. 670,000 still missing, so still a lot of work to do for Google to index them. But for the few pages who are indexed, the impressions and clicks are okay currently. But we can become better here. If we have people who know something about search optimization, I'm always happy to get feedback how we can improve here. Then another tool which Alberto wrote for me, I wanted that a long time but never found the time, is SNDiff. I think most of you who work with snapshots know SnapperDiff, which gives you more or less diff of 2 snapshots with the diff utility. Not always good readable, especially if you think about the RPM database. So SNDiff is diffing the RPM database and gives you an output of the packet list, which packages got updated, which got removed, which got additionally installed. And it's also diffing the etc, so you see which configuration files are changed with it. And if it is a root snapshot, you can, like with zipper, get a short overview only telling you so many packages added, so many packages updated, so many removed. And if you want to automatically post-process the data, we provide a JSON output, which you then can use. So another topic also Alberto is working on is building micro-S images with MKOSI as normal user. So why MKOSI if we have Kiwi? Quite simple, there are some projects out there who build everything with MKOSI, and so OpenSUSE is never there because up to date, they cannot build micro-S with MKOSI, and we want to be a little bit more visible there. So that is the groundwork for it. On the other side, if you as normal user try to install Kiwi on your system and build images, it's complex. MKOSI is really simple. You check out the GitHub tree, call the MKOSI wrapper inside of it, and that's all you need to do. So much easier, much simpler for end user. So what we did for it, the ButterFS procs work with systemd repart from systemd 258. We backported that so that we can now create the ButterFS subvolume layout we need for micro-S and Tumbleweed. So we need an own fstub entries that is also now merged enhancement that you can merge fstub content from different sources. For /var, micro-S and Tumbleweed are using the now copy-on-write flag for speed up, because else var would be really slow. The ButterFS developers implemented it for us in ButterFS Prox, and that's now waiting for the next ButterFS Prox release. And ST Bootutil is our utility where we are working on. So additional, as most of you, I think, will notice, is Tumbleweed is now using SE Linux, like MicroS is doing already since several years. We work together with the security team here. Better, we helped them with our knowledge of the tools and experience from MicroS. So helps them debugging the failing test cases, fixes for packages. Adjust our MicroS tool so that they also worked with Tumbleweed and built images for Tumbleweed, which are using SE Linux by default. So, also in our team is a transaction update, which is mostly maintained by and developed by Ignaz. So, which looks not much is a rework of the ETC engine, but that was a really complex task. Because in the past, ETC is a stacked overlay file system, and we changed that now that it is a ButterFS subvolume. So it makes it much easier to look into a snapshot, what was changed, what is really inside of the snapshot, and so on. That was a lot of work, and with a really good result, because we released it as an update, and meanwhile, there is one bug report that the update failed, and this is because the package which is failing is not following Hermetic user rules. So, yeah, that was. We have support for updating the system as container images, which means you download a container registry image and transaction update will apply it as /user update. So you can mix updating via OCI image and then put RPMs on it at some point in time when you can update the whole thing again with an OCI image. After me, Dan will talk about his approach, how to do that. So I don't know that yet. I'm also quite interested how he will solve it. But he will using also transaction update in the backend. We removed some old unmaintained commands, which we are never really working, and of course the usual huge amount of bug fixes and other improvements. Last year I gave a talk about SoftTribute. I don't know who was in it. I know some of you were. For the other one, what is SoftTribute? SoftTribute is a feature of systemd that does not reboot the full hardware, so no bootloader, no kernel, no initrd. Instead, it will only shut down all systemd services, like with a normal reboot. At the end, it will change in a new root file system if a new root file system is given. So for MicroS, where you update one snapshot and then need to reboot into this new snapshot, this is really great because you don't need to do the full boot cycle. You just stop userland, switch a root file system, in this case, ButterFS subvolume, and boot the system again. So it means starting all services as if you would quit initrd and then start the userless. So it's really fast because no hardware, no firmware, no bootloader. For some machines I have, so for the team hardware and my private, is normal reboot takes up to 5 minutes. With this, we speak about a few seconds. So it's really much faster if you don't need to do a full reboot because you did a kernel update or need a new initrd. But it also means that /run, for example, will not be cleared. The kernel tables will not be cleared because the kernel stays. Initrd will not be called. And we needed to do some additional init scripts, which will be called if you do a soft reboot, who are doing the cleanup, meaning resetting kernel tables and cleanup /run and similar things. So another thing is if you do a soft reboot, you can mark services as don't reboot, don't restart, which means they will survive soft reboot and keep running. It's quite handy if you have containers. These containers will stay alive and work the full time. For this, you need to do some special configuration magic with systemd services. It's a lot of stuff you need to change, adjust, or add, and it's always the same you need. So as I announced last year on OpenSUSE conference, I wrote a ButterFS soft reboot generator who is doing all the stuff for you. All you need to do only is create an .ini file which is telling the generator which services should survive a soft reboot and special things for it. So it generates all everything. Sometimes service files have options which are incompatible with this. So in this case, you cannot use that service or need to do other things. Also, SE Linux can be very picky and surprising with this. But if you use Pontman with Kotlet, so everything containerized, that's all problems you can more or less ignore. Because Pontman, the containers will keep running and you don't need to bother with SE Linux or any other things. So the status is it's fully implemented. Who is interested in all the details, demos and everything? I gave a talk at the All Systems Go conference end of last year. Watch the recording. That is the current status of it. We haven't yet enabled it yet in Tumbleweed and MicroS because we need help to address the OpenQL test cases. The test cases expect that the hardware will boot, that there is a BIOS, that there is a grub bootloader menu they can choose, and that is not there. So we need to address all the test cases, and with this we need help. In practice, I enabled it on several of our production machines. It's in use since a year, and I haven't seen a single issue about that. So booting bootloaders, we also enhanced YAST. We have now full support for grub2, grub2 BLS, and systemd boot, which means during installation, you can choose which bootloader you want to use. What you cannot do is change the bootloader later. We didn't implement that because switching from grub2 to grub BLS or systemd boot following the BLS specification requires a repartitioning of the system, and this is something we don't can really do reliable and robust in a running system, unknown system where we don't know how it belongs together and which other OS we need to address to work with it. Also in the current YAST is support for full disencryption with TPM or FIDO2 keys. So during installation, you can choose that you want full disencryption with TPM2-key or FIDO2. If somebody knows BitLocker from Windows, that's now the same for Linux. So we are reaching feature parity there more and more, getting closer to it. I really would like to combine TPM2 and the FIDO2 kit for the full disencryption, because if I'm traveling and somebody steals my notebook, he also steals the TPM to decrypt it. If I then have additional FIDO2 key, he also need to steal my FIDO2 key, makes it much harder to access the data. But here, upstream, that is still missing. We discussed it last year on the Linux Image Summit, but yeah. If my team has time, you want to look at it, not yet. What does it mean for OpenSUSE Tumbleweed and OpenSUSE MicroS? We want to change the defaults for the bootloaders. For Tumbleweed, we want to use grub2 BLS so that we can enable full disencryption with TPM by default later. It submitted the usual problem, the test cases need adjustment because the interface is slightly different. For MicroS, we want to use systemd boot. Same with OpenQL. We need help to adjust all the test cases to work with the new output. Why did we force different bootloaders for MicroS and Tumbleweed and not the same? It's simple. We learned the hard way that if we don't use something in our product daily, we don't notice if upstream came to crazy ideas and make changes which breaks our setup. So with this, we really have always a close eye on what is upstream doing and can intercept immediately when we see, okay, that is a change which is not good for us. So for desktops, TPM plus PIN is already working today. You can use that. Means if you boot, TPM will check your system. And then you still need a PIN, so that the TPM gives the crypto key away. Yeah. For Tumbleweed, it's possible, but not planned by default in this way. So Heal Tracker, Danilo from my team rewrote parts of the Heal Tracker that it works now with systemd boot and grub BLS together on MicroS. For this, we are using now bootctl and systemd bless boot. Our experience is nice tools, but it looks like nobody is really using them in production. So we need to get them, need to fix them first upstream. That's now working. And we enhanced grub 2 to be able to modify EFI variables we need to change things. So then full disencryption for status update. If you are interested in the full story about full disencryption with TPM and FIDO2 key, Alberto is giving a talk tomorrow afternoon. Join that. So what we did in the last year, seit Albertos last status update, last conference, is there were some security audits from my team. So Fabian aus my team found some problems in the design, and some other people in upstream found similar problems. So we now method the VPT header too and added it to the policy. And to avoid attacks based on media replacement, upstream created a service which we got in use now. And this also shows how important it is that we don't do our own thing, but work together with upstream, use upstream and influence upstream in what we need. Because if we would have done it alone with our own thing, then we would only be aware of half of the problems and only have fixes for half of the problems, and the other half would be still vulnerable and nobody would know. So working with upstream here together is really something which is really important with such big topics. Then we do some cleanup like the hard dependency for FIM would be gone now. We can support multiple kernels on Tumbleweed. On MicroS, we don't need that, and we started with MicroS because you fuse an older snapshot. But on Tumbleweed, you don't fuse an older snapshot, but you can boot the old kernel if the new one is not working. We also have now FIDO2 support for multiple platform partitions. In the past, there was a race, so systemd started the input for two partitions at the same time, and they blocked each other. We integrated this in Transaction Update 5.0, and on virtual machines, we don't measure everything anymore, because if you update the system and then QEMU and the firmware gets updated, it will change the measurement of your VM, and every time you update your machine, you need to re-measure your VMs, and that is nothing you want. So Alberto is giving tomorrow the talk about this topic, who is interested in full thing. Also, proof of concept for me is something I played with in the last weeks. Initially, I wanted that UID git drift solved, which you have or see with if you update via images. On OpenSUSE, we don't have that yet, but several teams are working on solutions for it. Only watch the talk after me, as already said. And at the same time, then our security team and the systemd developers came up. They want to get rid of the UID binaries for security reasons. So the first thing I looked at, how to solve this UID git drift. How does it happen? If you create, as distributor, create an image for /user, with every time you build it, the UIDs of a group, of a system account or the git of a system group can change. There is no way, if you change the number of groups, to make sure that in all cases you have the same mapping of UID and group. And this is something, who is interested in it more detailed, there is a Linux Weekly Net article about it, about Fedora CoreOS and how they suffer from it and how they want to solve it. If you look in our packaging policy for OpenSUSE, the recommendation is don't do that, but let all files be owned by root. Then everything is 0-0 as UID and git, and you will never have this problem. But if you use image-based update and with your new build, git or UID changed, the passwd and group file on the system stays the old one, so there is a mismatch, and that can become quite some problem security-wise. And if you look at a list, we have the group KVM, which is not needed. This is a packaging bug. I told the project manager, don't know if that got meanwhile fixed or not. And we have many files, binaries owned by group Shadow. And why are they owned by group Shadow? So that they are able to read the Shadow entry of the user who are calling it. So it means if you call change, change needs the rights to read your own entry from etc Shadow. And I think that can be solved in a better way. And at, when I wrote my first proof of concept, the systemd developers came on with they want to get rid of all ZURD binaries for security reasons, and our security team told me, oh, they had the same plan since years, get rid of ZURD binaries, but they never had the resources and time to do that. So we looked at my solution and found out it can solve all these cases in one. And so our security team says a well-defined EPC service is generally more secure than any ZURID binary. And the plan of the systemd developers is that systemd as pit one init process sets the now new prefs flag already for the kernel, so that now ZURID binary will work anymore with that. And at the same time, the kernel developers agreed on that they will create a new sysctl call, which makes ZURID binaries working again in containers, because you don't want to map all the services into the container. Then the lockdown of the container is useless. So I decided to use Varlink for the communication as APC process. I don't know, does anybody know Varlink here? A few, two, not much. So Varlink is interface description format for communication over RF Unix sockets, local sockets, using JSON. And I don't know how old it is, but when the systemd developers were looking for a replacement for DBus, then they decided to use Varlink. So libsystemd, science version 2.5.7, has a public interface for their Varlink functions and sdjson. And since they are both combined and have all the functionality I needed, it's really simple and easy to use that and write a service with it. And the result is PW access. If somebody knows a better name, please tell me too. I'm not really happy with the name, but nobody could tell me a better one yet. So since most of the time we only need to read the Shadow entry of the local user, we send via the systemd socket, systemd socket activated Varlink service, the query for this data, and then systemd starts the service. We get the data, and the service will be quit after some timeout. Meanwhile, enhanced it, you don't get the Shadow entry back, but for Permunix, it's better if they tell account is expired, account is not expired, password is expired, password will expire, or you are need to change your password. And the same with password check, yes, the password is correct or not. The project is this one in on GitHub. And for Linux PAM, I submitted the first patch to implement that. It's currently under discussion how to do it in the right way, call it, but yeah. And demo was, so change has no longer a ZURID bit and is no longer owned by group Shadow, but as user, I can still list my own data. For Permunix, it's calling Unix check PVD to do the authentication. I deleted that, and I can still become root. And the PV access daemon socket is enabled. So on the last conference, I presented this, the question came up, if it is then as robust as the current solution. Currently, Permunix is starting at their own and daemon and communicates via pipes with it. With this, you let systemd start daemon and communicate via the Varlink socket. So if systemd is no longer allowed to start a daemon for password authentication, then PEMUNIX will also not be able to start a daemon for password authentication. So the risk that you cannot log in as root is in both cases the same. If you cannot start a daemon anymore, you cannot log in at root. So that is now changed there. So current conclusions. We don't need to have tools which are owned by GroupFedder or setuid or setgit. For this, we have a solution. PEMUNIX also works without setuid bits. That is also solved. If you listen to the systemd developers, we don't need zoo and sudo anymore. That can be replaced with their run zero. And I see this as the biggest issue, because sudo and su are used in millions or billions of scripts. And now this admin will rewrite all the scripts to run zero, which is, doesn't provide the functionality sudo provides and so on. So either somebody finds the time and merges run zero with sudo and su or writes compatibility wrappers, or this whole thing will never be enabled because sudo su needs setuid and we cannot live without currently. It's maybe okay if you have a special lockdown embedded system where you don't need sudo su, there run zero may be enough, and there it's a great enhancement if you have no setuid binaries. But on the normal tumbleweed microS system, that is, in my opinion, currently the four stopper. Then we have new group. Does anybody know new group? Ino, you don't know that? So new group was mainly used 30 years ago when you're working at university with different people and have an own project with an own group that you change to the group and can write in the group project directory. So I haven't seen any use case for years, so in my opinion, we can ignore that and delete that. Cron, yeah, can use systemd timers for users. We use systemd timers for everything else too. And the few raw use cases for mount, I'm pretty sure you could also use sudo for that. Yeah. Another topic I'm working on since quite some time is systemd sysext images. So what are sysext images? So if you think about microS, you have a read-only root file system. If you install additional packages, you need to reboot to activate them. If you have no problems and you want to debug your system, you don't want to reboot it to install the debugging tools, because then the service is no longer running and you cannot debug it anymore. So you need a way to get it installed. And there, the systemd developers came up with system sysext images. It's an image which only contains the part of the file system in slash user or slash opt or both. This hierarchy, this loop image is loopback mounted, and every file inside of this image is mounted via overlay in your running system. Which means if I need strace, I install the strace sysext. I tell systemd sysext to merge this image, and then I have strace in user bin strace. It's just there. I don't need to fiddle around with somehow change root or anything else to get it there. Just install it, done. The drawback is it's only really usable for simple tools, because temp files, the directories, this users, the and services are not really supported. So the first one are not supported at all. There's limited support, meanwhile, to restart services, but this is also, yeah. The biggest problem I see is you can overwrite all host OS files. So if your sysext image is coming with a vulnerable OpenSSL library, the OpenSSL library on your system will become the vulnerable one and all your applications using this vulnerable OpenSSL library. So that is, you need to think before what is inside of the image and if you really want to use it or not. But if you use the normal development tools and only put inside of the sysx image what is not in your home root slash user directory. That's normally not a problem. And the dependency handling is done based on etc OS release, so product name, product version number, architecture, and some sysx level flags, but not on RPM dependencies or RBEs. So if you install something else and everybody else in your root file system, then it could be that your sysx image will not work. So up until today, we used Toolbox for this debugging. So we had a script called Toolbox, which will use Pontman or Docker and download a base image called Toolbox, in which you can join and use Zipper to install everything inside of this container image. But if your network is broken, it doesn't help you because you will not have access to the Toolbox container anymore. While with the image, you can copy the image on your USB stick, go to your machine, copy it on disk, mount it, you have the tools to debug your network. And downloading a base system image, these images are big. And then you additionally install your software. If you only install this as English S trace, we speak about 1 or 2 megabytes, or even smaller if SCoFOS can compress it better. While if you speak about Toolbox, we are speaking about 2 to 400 megabytes or even more. So it's quite a different. So we can meanwhile build sysx images in OpenSUSE build service. You can either build these images with self-written scripts, that is what most people do. Disadvantage is this does not work in OBS. Or again, MKOSI. MKOSI is tightly coupled with systemd, so is able to do build the sysx images correct. And the systemd developers made some prefer on our OBS developers and sent patches. And meanwhile, in OBS, we have MKOSI support and can build the sysx images there. So I have a project where I build the most important sysx images I daily need, which means I have a debugger, I have a compiler, I have S-trace and TCB dump, and I have also Kubernetes image, which means I can also install Kubernetes, update Kubernetes, independent of the host OS. The next step will be, after I have the management tool ready, to get this into the factory, so that factory automatically releases the matching sysx images for a new microOS build. So the management tools systemd provides are importctl, updateCTL, systemd sysupdate. I implemented support for OBS this year for them. So 2.5.8 has it. Our maintainer was so nice to backport it to 2.5.7. So currently on Tumbleweed on microOS, and I also think slash 16, you can use all these tools to download images from OBS. Not only sysx images, but all kinds. They will check if the GPG signature is correct and everything. So the disadvantage of the updateCTL systemd sysupdate and similar tools is they only work if your main host OS is also a systemd image, so one systemd understands. We don't have that, and we have no plans to provide that in this way. And there's also a problem to make dependency checking simple. So only think about you have a HTTP server. There are now your several hundred megabyte big images with Kubernetes, and you want the latest version which is compatible with your host OS. But the dependency is inside of the image. So you don't want to download, let's say, 10 images are 1 gigabyte to only look which is the correct image for you. To solve this, the systemd developers had the idea all these images need to have the same version. Which means if I release a new Kubernetes version, I need to sync with everybody who provides these X images and with a distributor providing the base OS, that they all bump the version number to the same version. This will never work. And everywhere I spoke about, everybody say, no go. So SAP will not speak with Oracle and us if they want to release a new SAP version to agree on a new version. And on the other side, I want to update Kubernetes and only Kubernetes, because I don't want to update the host OS, but I would need to update everything with this. So that's why I came up with a new idea. When building the images, I create a JSON file, put it next to it with all the dependencies. And these JSON files are also signed by OBS. So we have a SAR256 sums file, which lists them all with all signatures that is signed. So we can verify every single file used here that it's really from us and nobody other tampered with them. And to get the connection between the SysX images and the system, I did the same. In the end, it's Zipper for SysX images. I called a SysX manager. It's a Varlink service. Why a Varlink service? Why not everything together? Because for every operation with the image, you need to loopback mount it, so the tool would need to be set UID root. Even if somebody would want to only list the images which are there and which are compatible. So I did the same as systemd did and put it in the service. We have a global store and we have a snapshot-specific store. Why a global store and a snapshot-specific one? Because if you update your OS, you don't always need to update the SysX image, and I don't want to blow up the disk space with 10 times the same SysX image, the same version. So I put them in the global store, link them in the snapshot, and if I delete the snapshot, the link is gone, and then I can ref count how often is this image used. Okay, no snapshot is using this image anymore, I can delete it. That is for doing cleanup. So I have a GitHub project for the tool, and I have an OBS project where you can find the SysX images and the tool and everything you need for that. Okay, for a demo. So I want to compile Hello World. VCC is not there. I told the SysX manager and list which image are available. So all are remote, some are compatible, GCC looks good, so I install the GCC image, I won't need a compiler. Okay, the progress button for download is not yet there, but in the background I only use systemd tools. So that's really only a tool which is calling all the systemd tools in the backend to combine them correct. Now I have merged the GCC, I can compile my Hello World. Now I wait a little bit until OBS creates new versions of the images. I check if there is a new image. And I see, okay, there is a new GCC image. I tell the service to update the images. Again, the feedback progress bar is not yet implemented. It's still on the to-do list. The image is updated, I refresh systemd the image, so the new VCC is mounted. And if I list again the available images, I see now VCC is remote available, local available, it's installed and it's compatible, that is what we have active. The old VCC image is remote, no longer available, only local. And in the future, I will also delete it automatically. That's also on the to-do list. That's in the end. I see we have some minutes for questions. Are there any questions about any of these topics? Yes.
Thank you so much for the presentation. I have a question about this UID and GID problematic. Can you iterate a little bit more on it? Why you think that's a really good decision to make it 0, 0, 0?
As I said, if you build an image, then you create etc password. So if you install a system, and RPM creates a group and a user ID, they will get the next free user ID or GET. You can specify in the sysusers file that a static UID should be used, but if it is already in use, he will independently choose another one. So there is no way to guarantee that I build an image today, I install it, so I have an etc pass within etc group matching this image, and then half a year later, several additional system users and groups were added, and suddenly my group fedow gets another git or system user UID, and then the files in the image are owned by a different group than you expect, because the etc pass vd and etc fedow will not be changed. Your system will not be changed. Only slash user will be changed. So everything outside of slash user is still using the old UID name mapping. And so, while at the build host, the image has user and group root and fedow on your final system, it may have user root, but the group is from a user, a private group, whatever, and he suddenly has a binary set git with its own group, so he can do things he should not be able to do with it. But for more details, I suggest to read the Linux Weekly News article about Fedora Core OS. I hope they explain it dort in more detail with examples. Or we speak later this day in a quiet minute. More questions? No more questions? Okay, then I give you back 3 minutes. And thank you for coming and listening.